So big win for the Whitecaps, 3-2 over Real Salt Lake, and now we have a special guest joining us in studio. It is Simon Judge, FIFA.com editor. Welcome, Simon.
Yeah, it's actually Fudge, by the way.
Fudge, I'm so sorry. Apologies.
Yes, no problem. No problem.
Right out of the gate. Still waking up, got to get a few coffees in me. But welcome aboard.
Yes, thank you. Just like to say hello to everyone out here on Sportsnet 650. I was on a previous 650 dial with a certain individual, Mr. Balak, back in the day with the old soccer talk that Tyler Green and I did. We're still trying to do it as a podcast, but it's been a while since we've been able to get together and do that. Delighted to be on here.
Same dial, new building, new station, but
yeah,
welcome.
Absolutely, yeah.
Whitecaps game last night, a big win for the Caps.
It was. They're starting a four-game homestand, and with the games in hand that they've got around a lot of the teams in the Western Conference, I mean, it was essential that they got off to a good start with this homestand, especially with the fact that it's of that four-game homestand, it's three games in a week. So they've got Wednesday against Minnesota here, and then next weekend as well. They want to take maximum points and really take full advantage of the fact that they've got games in hand on the teams around them, teams above them like Portland, who lead the table, and the ones below them. And it was particularly an essential win because the team that they beat have played more games and are trying to find their way into the top six. So the fact they've put some distance between themselves and Salt Lake, I think at this stage is a very important thing. And then if they can maybe make a couple more wins, we can maybe start talking less about are they going to make the playoffs and talk more about where in the top six they're going to finish if they can put themselves in that position.
Do you think that they're trending in the right direction, that they will be able to accomplish that?
I think so. The big thing that they think they got out of the international break that we've just had, even though obviously the likes of Kendall Waston and Christian Blanes were away with Costa Rica in World Cup qualifying and were very much involved in that. Waston's been a great vein of form, played extremely well for Costa Rica in those two games. He was really good against the United States a little over a week ago. And they're virtually there for Russia 2018. But he turned right around after having played for his country on Tuesday in Central America, comes here and put in an excellent performance, and we got another rarest of the rare of him scoring with his feet, which I think is twice this year. I mean, that has to go in as the eighth wonder of the world, seeing Kendall Waston score with his feet. So a remarkable thing. But they are trending in the right direction. They're healthy right now. I mean, the biggest thing they've had this season has been the straight struggles of injuries. But they're getting healthy. And they're starting to kind of develop. The season for them is developing in a way that I had hoped they would aim, in that they didn't have to be fantastic through the first four or five months, but just stay in the conversation and then get towards a point where they want to be playing their best soccer pretty much about now towards the end of the year. That's how you end up winning the MLS Cup. And there's good positive signs. They could be one of the teams that can do that in this league.
You touched on the injuries, the big one, Matias Laba going down, and then there were so many concerns about will this be their downfall? But the depth is proving to be unbelievable at this point. These additions that Carl Robinson has made are really helping the club. And, I mean, obviously you're going to notice when Matias Laba is not playing, but with him out there, they're still performing.
Yeah, you would have noticed if it happened last year, because it would have been a very big hole for them to fill. But beginning in the likes of Gazal, and I think this pickup of this Nigerian this week that they picked up, Bore, I think his name is, or Nosa is his first name, he's got a very, very good CV. You know, he's played in European competitions for some fairly decent European clubs at one point. I think he was at Real Betis in Spain. You've got to be fairly decent to be playing in La Liga. Doesn't matter what club it is. And he's also had a couple of caps for Nigeria, who are one of the stronger African sides. World Cup-wise, they're probably going to be qualifying for Russia themselves. So here's a guy that adds more depth to that. And I think it's not just with the current season in mind, it might be even looking a little bit like next year. You look at the signing of Marinovic, the goalkeeper, who's very much first choice for New Zealand. Haven't seen too much of him, but with the question marks over the future of David Oestead with his contract up at the end of the year, the forward thinking that Carl Robinson's been able to do in terms of heading off any issues that they could have going forward has been a really good one. So in this case, having that extra depth, combined with the fact that people are healthy and now competing for places, the team's in a really good spot at the moment and should be feeling confident, especially with the fact that they've got these home games and they have games in hand on everyone around them in the West.
I like the structure that Carl Robinson seems to be implementing with these contracts, where he signs Nosa and it's for the remainder of the season with club options for the following 2 years. So prove yourself, and then moving forward, he set himself up that if he likes the addition, if Nosa mixes well with the team, he's got him for 2 more years.
That's the idea. Yeah. I mean, and if you notice as well, in a lot of cases, he's signing, and you can go back to the Bernie Abini signing earlier in the year. Look at the age of the players. They have something about them in terms of what they bring to the table, but they're fairly young. They're probably in about 25 years of age or younger. So he's looking to try and bring in a guy that he can mold and develop. And that's what the club has been aiming to try and do. There is debate out there of how successful they've been able in doing that, but it's not lost on anyone what their ethos is. It may be just starting to turn around and work here, because what they get out of it is a very good collective team spirit. And I think what they have right now is that. They're playing well. They're getting a wide contribution. You heard Carl Robinson earlier, and he has mentioned it on a number of occasions this season about the fact that they need a collective effort. Collective effort in terms of the players on the score sheet. Collective effort in terms of everything they need to do in a particular game. And they're getting it done. And they haven't been able just to get it done at home at times, but on the road. I think the big thing this year, why they're in the position they're in, is because they've been able to go and get some big results, and even in places where they never had done it before, like in Dallas. I don't think they were expected before last night's game to win in Orlando. They did. So they're picking up big road results as well, which is a huge thing in this league.
They've already surpassed their point total from last season with last night's victory. Winners 3 of the last 4. They're 3rd in the Western Conference, behind Portland and Seattle. Do you think that where they're at right now, would they be able to take on a Portland or a Seattle in a playoff home-and-home situation?
I think they could give them a game. It could be very interesting. They haven't, I think, head-to-head this season against the Timbers. They haven't been as good. It's not to say that they can't get the better of them. They'll fancy their chances, I think, against anybody at this point. The thing is, to me, it's more about, you know, how well are they playing, especially through not just this month, but particularly October and November. Whoever wins the MLS Cup is usually the team that's really found their form. Seattle did that last year. The LA Galaxy over the years has done it before. These are teams that aren't great through the early parts of the year, but then they get it going right at the right time. And because the season is so long, I mean, by timeline, the MLS season is as long as an NHL season with Stanley Cup playoffs. They start at the beginning of March, finish at the beginning of December. That's about 9 months. You've got such a long timeline that there's teams can kind of peak and trough in the trends, but the biggest thing that you need to do is to be playing your best soccer in those last 2 to 3 months. And if they're able to do that and they really concentrate on that, they'll fancy taking on anybody in this league, and especially in the West, and give them a game. So we have to be encouraged, or Whitecaps fans have to be encouraged by what they're seeing at the moment. Not get too excited, but as I say, it is trending in the right direction.
Good stuff. We touched on the depth earlier. They're entering a very busy stretch. They play last night. They play Wednesday against Minnesota, and then they have Columbus Crew on Saturday. So is this where the depth really comes into play, where you got some big points up for grabs over the next 6 days, and you need these wins?
Yeah, they will. Carl Robinson does tend to rotate his players, keep things fresh. Wouldn't be too surprised if he tries to do that against Minnesota. Now, of course, the visitors that they're playing, they too played last night, so they'll have to try and rotate a little bit as well. But I mean, Minnesota are a bit of a dangerous team. They're well adrift of the playoff picture at this point as an expansion side. So they'll try and come here and play spoiler, because guys are playing for contracts for next season. Columbus, different story. They're going very well in the East. They need the points. That game on Saturday could be a good one. If you're thinking about games to choose and go out and watch them play, maybe next Saturday is a really good one from that point of view. Could be the return of Kakuta Mane in yellow and black, or gold and black, since his trade over there for with Tony Chani coming the other way. And then Colorado is another struggling team that comes here, and they're going to need to use their depth to try and keep things fresh. There are a lot of good headache decisions for Carl Robinson to make, ultimately trying to figure out a way of getting as much of the 12, or try and get all 12 points that they can get on offer, because they're certainly, and would take away maybe the Columbus game, two of those three are very winnable games on paper for Vancouver in some respects, because of the struggles that those two Western Conference teams have had. And they're going to want to, you know, they're going to want to put in an effort here that sort of reflects that, and really then puts them in a very strong playoff position.
Should the Caps and Caps fans be concerned over the injury to Christian Bolanos?
It's tough to say at this point. I mean, he's not the youngest of guys. He's in his mid-30s, and he's trying to do the club and country thing. I mean, I think certainly internationally, this I think is going to be his last go around trying to go to another World Cup with Costa Rica. He's obviously been fully committed to that. He started both of those games on the Friday and Tuesday, and obviously he's come back with an issue. He would be missed if he's missed for an extended period of time because he does bring him quite a bit of creativity. But again, there's some good options now that they have that they can fill, and if they have to play in a slightly different way, that they can. And I think the big thing is they've got enough of these guys into the mix in the setup that they've been working with each other long enough now that they've built up enough of an understanding that no matter what kind of lineup gets put on the pitch, they can. They've got a good enough understanding, but you're right. It's a player that is key to them from an attacking point of view, from a creative standpoint through midfield. They need him available sooner rather than later for sure. Despite the fact that he's still committing as much to the international side of things as he is with the club.
We're on Sportsnet 650 right now, talking to Simon Fudge, FIFA.com editor, and Simon. Switching to more of the MLS as a whole right now. Caps sitting third in the Western Conference, but overall, what's your kind of outlook? Do you think that the Caps, you mentioned, maybe can make that playoff push, give Portland and Seattle a trouble? On the east side, Toronto's looking very good right now. Is Toronto kind of considered the favorite?
Yes, it is. They are by a clear distance. In my time, sort of following MLS, I haven't seen a team dominate like they have. I think they're still undefeated at home. One report last night that I saw that they could be on course to having the best season ever of any MLS team in the history of the league. And that goes back to when the league formed in 96. It was an LA Galaxy side in 98 that amassed 71 or 68 points, and they're on course to hit 71 this year. They are totally dominant, and they're trying to make up for lost time of when they lost the MLS Cup final last year to Seattle in their own backyard. And I think they will win the Supporters' Shield. They want to be able to host that game again, and it can't be lost on anyone the fact that if you want to win the MLS Cup this year, you've got to beat them. They have been that good. They've been full value for that. There hasn't really been any team at all that's given them an issue. Vancouver could if they get them a little bit later on because the Whitecaps played them so early in the season that they haven't had a chance to maybe see what they could do against them sort of now or even later in the year. But the fact that they've been having their way with any team, especially in their own backyard, it's been interesting. My only little bit of concern with them is because they've been playing so well right now, it's all fine and good that they are right now. But as I've said before, they have to be playing like that pretty much next month and the month after. And there are... You know, the stronger the two conferences is now the East, and there are teams in that conference that I think if they could put things right, they'd like to have a crack at them. And I think it would make certainly playoff time in the East a really interesting one. They're the team to beat. I think they know that they're the team to beat, and I think everyone around them, especially in the East, knows that that's the team they have to beat. It's up to them to go out and perform. They're well equipped to certainly go and take it all this year. And it's going to be very, very interesting if they can maintain the kind of form and pace that they have been, because let's face it, they have been on some tear.
Let's head overseas. We were saying off air that you are heading to India.
That is correct. Part of the role with my duties with FIFA.com, which I've been with for a little over a year, is you get to go to one FIFA tournament event a year. And so in about 3 weeks from now, I'm heading for India. To help cover the Under-17 World Cup. It's the first time that India have ever had a FIFA event in their country. It's the first time I've ever gone to India. There's been quite a bit of preparation I've had to do for it and stuff. So very excited because these Youth World Cups, earlier this year we had the Under-20 World Cup. Between the Under-17 and Under-20, you get a glimpse of the future. And certainly at this level, what's exciting about these tournaments is you sort of take the preconceived notions of what's a strong country and a weak country off the table because the kids at this level are all pretty talented at the same level. And then not only that, you get that sort of preview glimpse of who could be coming up in the world game and is going to be a real star sort of 5-10 years from now. Anybody who remembers the under-20 World Cup from 10 years ago in this country, you look at the big world stars that we have right now. Well, we had a handful of them play here in Vancouver. Luis Suarez, Edison Cavani, Juan Mata, Gerard Pique. These guys are now very much household names in the world game. But back then, obviously, they were the sort of the main players in an under-20 World Cup. So the fact that these tournaments are every 2 years on the guys' side, and then on the offsetting years, you've got the women's versions as well. You get a sense and a glimpse of this. And I think what's going to be really exciting with this tournament is the enthusiasm there seems to be in India right now. We're going to have really good crowds out for those games. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch in many respects with the combination that because you just know that these kids will feed off the atmospheres of the crowds and things out there. And very unique experience. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And hopefully I come all back in one piece at the end of it, hopefully.
Yeah. Simon, you're going to the under-17 World Cup. There was also news earlier about the main World Cup and that there's actually a bid from Canada. Who were they up against, and really what are the challenges to hosting the World Cup event in Canada, and is it worth getting excited over? Is Canada really that close to receiving this bid?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to be it's a triple joint bid, which obviously involves the United States and Mexico. It's the first World Cup that's going to likely get expanded to the 48 team format. So it's going to be a tournament that you know, is going to have some unique challenges in that regard because you'll have that many more games. Mm-hmm. So as a triple country bid with all the stadium infrastructure that is in the three countries, they're the most ideally set to do a new 48 team format tournament. And the only other country that's competing with them is Morocco, and that's a single country bid. So I think in many respects, by the World Cup next year, because I think the decision will be made in June, when there's a FIFA Congress, I think maybe just before next year's World Cup, it'll be decided. And then from there, as the plan is supposed to go, 10 of those games are supposed to be here in Canada. BC Place, among another handful of stadiums, have put their names down as saying, you know, they'd like to host games. I think of the 10 games, you'll see probably 3 or 4 played here at BC Place because of the prior experience that they've had with the Women's World Cup and other big international games. It's probably the most soccer-ready of stadiums in this country, if you think about it. There'd be issues in Montreal that they have to fix, and there'd have to be more expansion on BMO Field in Toronto. But then you look at a place like Regina, it's just built Mosaic Stadium. I was just back there a month ago having a look around the brand new stadium in Regina. May only hold 30,000 capacity, but it can be expanded to 48. They've put their name in to have maybe a game or two. I mean, it'd be an amazing thing for me to think that you'd have World Cup games being played in Regina, but it's all about, well, what kind of stadium infrastructure is in place? And so that's sort of the next step. The first thing that needs to happen is that Canada, Mexico states have been given the bid, and then from there, the people that are obviously overseeing that then make the decision on which stadiums across the three countries would then have to host games. So I think it's got a very, very strong chance because the expansion of the tournament is going to be happening from that point on. Mm-hmm. As I say, I think the bid's been set up in such a way that it's going to best equip it compared to, I'm sure, what Morocco has put on the table.
Well, you mentioned infrastructure issues, and BC Place certainly has the size to host an event like that, but the main issue with the Women's World Cup was the turf. Is that going to be an issue for the men playing on the surface like that? Or,
well, they won't play on the surface like that. I think we can assume, without being sure, but I think we can assume that all games will be played on grass. I think they'll bring in grass for that. For that World Cup, it's a completely different story, and I don't see a lot of issues in many ways with the kind of technology that you have now to be able to bring in grass on sort of tracks and have it sort of sit there and live for a short amount of time. So I think that's something that you should anticipate. I mean, it's 9 years away, so there's a lot of time between now and then in terms of having to solve those logistical issues. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that the debate about having games on turf when it comes to World Cup like that, I, I, I wouldn't anticipate that happening. I think it's, you know, every game that's going to be played in this tournament, I'm sure it doesn't matter if it's here, States, Canada, it'll be probably played on grass. And I don't think it's going to be that much of a challenge to get grass put down on BC places. Maybe some people might think it might be.
Just the fact that Canada is even involved in this discussion for a bit is a kind of a sign the program is advancing. I mean, 9 years away, like you said, but is it a sign of things that Soccer Canada's turned a corner, more players are coming up through the pipeline, the development's getting better?
Well, not by the way that they dismally, and I underline dismally, failed to qualify for this year's Under-20 and Under-17 World Cups. They were saying that they were poor is being polite. And that's where our biggest issue is. You know, if I was running the CSA, I'd take probably most of the resources and pour it into our under 17, under 20 programs. For one thing, I'd make sure we have the right type of coaches in place. I have a bit of an issue with the fact that the person that's running the under 20 program is still there after two failed campaigns. He, as far as I'm concerned, he should not be there. Octavio Zambrano, from what I understand, since taking over from Benito Floro, was given the mandate to oversee the men's program. And I think he needs to make a decision or two in terms of who's going to run those age groups in it, because we have to build from the bottom up. And there's not been enough of a focus for me in that. And because that's been the case, we're still massively behind the big five in the CONCACAF region. And that's not just the States and Mexico. It's Costa Rica, it's Honduras, it's Panama. And if you look at the four teams that qualify from this region for the two Youth World Cups this year, Mexico, States, Costa Rica, Honduras, both cases, they must be doing something right. Yeah. And they have been continuing to do something right. Who are the teams in the last round? Hex includes Costa Rica, includes Honduras, includes Panama, you know, as well as with the States and Mexico. Not enough people here, even within the soccer community in this country, and it's a stinging criticism, have learned enough by what good work those countries have done down there. They fob them off and treat them like tin pot Latin American countries, and it really annoys me when I see that, because it's just ignorance at the good work that's being done down there and that they have done it, and to put themselves a class above us in many respects. And we have to get our head around to the reality that there's a lot of catching up that we have to do. There's no guarantee, by the way, at this point that Canada will be given a hosting spot, even if they're hosting games at that 2026 World Cup.
Okay.
That decision has not been made, by the way. If it is, and you'd have to think it would be.
Yeah.
Because they'll give it to the States, and they're going to give that to the Mexicans, I'm sure. It still doesn't hide the fact that, you know, what we have not done even up until this point is still going to probably leave us in a huge disadvantage even in 9 years from now, because we're so far behind. And we've got a huge amount of catching up that we need to do. And how we go about it is probably the key. But how we have been trying to go about it, I have not been terribly satisfied with it.
Simon, much appreciated for coming in. If people want to check out your stuff, follow you on Twitter, where are you at?
Well, myself, I'm on Twitter at SimonFudge74.
All right. Not Simon Judge, by the way.
No, yes, not Simon Judge. No relation to Aaron Judge.
Yeah. Tyler Green and I, whenever, hopefully we can, we've been doing obviously a podcast called Soccer Talk. Hopefully we'll be doing stuff in the near future, especially here as we get into the business end of the season. I'm obviously contributing and working for FIFA.com on the site there. So certainly follow any of that with obviously not just the tournament next month in India, but World Cup qualifying. Probably one of the more crucial stages of World Cup qualifying for Russia in October, and then November has to all be decided by the end of this year. The draw for the World Cup is December 1st in the Kremlin in Moscow. So it all has to be done before the end of the year. So it'll all be there on FIFA.com for everyone to follow.